Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today, we're featuring highlights of a recent fireside chat that global tech services and consulting firm Infosys hosted, featuring our own ISF CEO, Steve Durbin. Steve's interviewer is his longtime colleague and friend, Vishal Salvi, who serves as Chief Information Security Officer and Head of Cybersecurity Practice at Infosys. Here's their conversation.
Hi, Steve. Welcome to the Fireside Chat.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Vishal. It's a pleasure. I think the whole topic of raising awareness in cyber is one that we've talked about for many years. And I think it's one of those things that never goes away. You know, you can never do enough in that particular space because it's such a fast-changing, dynamic area in which we work. And I think that, you know, continuing to do the sorts of things that you're doing at Infosys around raising that level of awareness is hugely important.
Yeah, of course. And Steve, you know, just to get ourselves warmed up on this conversation, you know, we live, of course, in a very different world today as compared to the last time that we met. And, you know, I just wanted to kick it off by really asking you, you know, personally, how has life been for you? You know, what has really changed and what has been your observations in the last 18 to 20 months?
Yeah, you're right. It's been a huge roller coaster, I think, you know, not just for me, but for everybody, adapting to an entirely different environment. I mean, personally, as you know, Vishal, I used to travel a tremendous amount. So I would always be visiting, you know, members, whether that be in India, whether it be in North America, Europe or Asia. And so that's probably been the biggest change for me personally. You know, I haven't been on an aeroplane for, it will be something like 2 years by the time I do it again. I've done some internal stuff within the UK, but it's not the same. And that has, I think, really shown me some of the challenges that people are facing when it comes to cyber in particular, when it comes to just level of awareness around security, because we've changed the way in which we work. We always talked about how difficult it was, you know, for chief information security officers, for companies to secure their assets. And then within the space of must have been days, weeks for some people, we completely transformed our work environment. So we took what very little security we had anyway within the corporate environment, and we exploded that by having people work from home, using devices that we had no knowledge of, you know, in environments that we simply couldn't control. And so that, I think, brought about a need for business leaders everywhere to just readjust in terms of how they work with people, in terms of explaining some of the challenges that are there. And, you know, I have to say from at the ISF, I think that everybody who works within the organization responded exceptionally well to that. You know, the challenge for us was to keep the wheels on, to keep producing for our members, to keep providing, I suppose, a degree of certainty in an uncertain world, and to help them to deal with this, as I say, continually shifting landscape. And I think we did that very well. So that, I think, has been the biggest thing for me. It's been the travel, it's been the change. And I have to say that certainly over the last few months, in the UK, things have become a little easier. So we're able to meet people again. And, you know, I didn't realize how much I missed people from that point of view. But you get a much richer level of discussion, of conversation, the ability to tackle some of these challenges that we face when you're actually able to meet people in person. And I think that, you know, that's a key message as well for anybody who's thinking about what does the new organizational structure look like. Hybrids, I think, have a role to play, but you really can't replace that face-to-face interaction for some of the more difficult problem solving and challenges that we face. My hope is that everybody can get back to a balance that takes the best of remote working. I've said for some while now, I see no point in asking people to sit on trains or planes or cars for hours to get to a location if all they're going to do is sit there and not communicate with anybody in person. You know, if you're just going to review a report or sit in front of your laptop, well, you may as well do that from home. So when you do actually get out to meet people, then you have to make sure that those are really high impactful sessions that we're having. And I think we've been fortunate to be able to use this kind of technology. it works best with people that you know. And so, you know, for this discussion, for instance, we've known each other for many years, and I don't think we've seen each other for at least 2 years. And, you know, that's very sad, but we're able still to have what hopefully people will think is a meaningful conversation, even though we haven't seen each other for a while.
Yeah. So, you know, Steve, you're just coming out of a very successful ISF Congress, and I've been associated with ISF for more than a decade now. And it's fascinating, you know, because it's truly a practitioner's congress where people talk about what you're innovating and what are your best practices and, you know, be transparently sharing those practitioners' view in the congress, right? Now, what are your key impressions that you're able to see, you know, some of the bigger trends and bigger messages coming out of this ISF Congress this year?
Yeah, the ISF Congress is still available for members of the ISF to watch on demand. So if anybody who is watching this hasn't been able to go online and access some of the sessions, then they still can do so by logging on through ISF Live. And there's no limit, as you know, Vishal, to the number of people within Infosys that can access those sessions. What do we learn? What has changed? I think that one of the significant things for me is the move to risk. Security is about risk. I've talked about that for many years. I think that's being reflected more in some of the things that we were seeing. Certainly the way members were talking about how they were dealing with security challenges, and it is about risk management. We've talked a lot about the need to communicate and work more collaboratively with the business, with the board in certain instances. And so again, this transition to trying to learn and understand the language of the business, because a lot of it is just down to communication. We're not very good at communicating, I think, or not as good as we could be at communicating. And some of those themes came through. For me, a Congress is about trying to give members exposure to what their colleagues are doing all around the world. And we have some very strong member discussions about what they're doing. It's also about trying to expose our members, I think, to some different kind of thinking that might help in the way that they try to get messages across. And I think the overall message that came out of the Congress is security, whether you call it cyber, whether you call it information, whether you call it anything, security is maturing very quickly. It is instrumental, intrinsic in everything that we do. You can't avoid it. If you produce data, then you have to protect it. And that's becoming more challenging because it has a value. And of course, there are no companies that can exist without data, without information. So whether we like it or not, security professionals have moved, I think, from being the people that you might try to avoid because they'll prevent you from doing things, to being the people that you really want to have on your side to provide you with some of the insights that are necessary to run a successful business. And there were plenty of examples of that that came through from the Congress.
I think if you look at the work that ISF has been doing, and one of the key prominent piece of work that ISF has been doing is the threat horizon. But personally, while you know that it is a combination of individuals and members coming together, from your point of view, what do you think is really going to happen? And what are those key trends that you see which are going to unfold in the next 3 years? If I had to put you on the spot and ask you that, Steve, what would those be?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Vishal. Because you're right. I mean, the purpose of the threat horizon is to try to look forward, to try to provide security professionals with something different to talk about, to expand their thinking. And you're right, I do. I spend a lot of time trying to anticipate, I suppose, in some of the work that I do, where we may evolve to. What do I think's happening? Where do I think we're going? I think that we are moving very rapidly to a time where security, the protection of our information, is probably the most important thing that an organization has to do. Now, if you happen to be in the financial space listening to that, people will raise their eyebrows and say, well, actually, no, it's about trading or it's about, you know, investment. But for me, it isn't, because you have to be able to protect that. And we know that the security space is changing very, very rapidly. We know that there are threat actors out there who are becoming very much more sophisticated, who will always, in my view, be ahead of us, because they have the luxury of time, they have the luxury of resource, they have the luxury of finances. And so for everybody that is producing something of value, there will be somebody who wants to steal it. And they can do that very easily. They can do it from multiple locations all around the world. So I think that cybercrime is probably one of the biggest threats. And certainly that is reinforced by, you know, some of the work coming out of the World Economic Forum, out of Interpol. So the challenge for us is, how do we as an industry better equip ourselves to deal with it? We cannot prevent the theft of data. What we have to do is we have to better equip ourselves to respond to that threat, so that when it happens, and it is a question of when rather than if, when it happens, our businesses are sufficiently robust to be able to get back up and running. And it doesn't matter for me whether that might be ransomware, whether it might be denial of service, whatever it is. So if we then step back and think, what does that mean from a security professional standpoint? It means that we have to focus on the day-to-day. Yes, of course. It means we have to focus on the people. Looking at different statistics, you know, 90%, 75% doesn't really matter. A significant proportion of all attacks are related in some way to people, either because people have forgotten to do something or because they've been particularly targeted. So people are at the heart of what we do in security. That's a slightly different perspective as well from some of the others that you'll hear out there. And then I think that we have to get much smarter about how we use this combination of people and technology. So artificial intelligence, or machine learning — we're nowhere near artificial intelligence — machine learning is a real potential benefit to us in security, taking away some of that more mundane, mind-numbing exercises that people are not very good at and yet have to do, hand that over to machines, and then free up our people resources to do the higher value work. That helps in terms of enriching the job experience. It helps in terms of the fact that we do have skill shortages. And I think that is a very significant change that we're going to have to go through. So if I look forward, you know, to summarize what's going to happen, I think it's going to get more interesting. I think we'll see many more really innovative attacks on companies. I think companies will have to become much better at, as I say, building up this robustness in there. And for me, people and the way in which we as individuals interact with the tools that are available will be key to whether or not we're successful or whether we begin to fall behind. So competitive advantage is really something that we'll begin to hear a lot more about within a security context, and we haven't been there before.
So one of the things that also came out from the World Economic Forum is that the cybersecurity topic is a very important and prominent and mainstream topic right now. And therefore, it needs the attention and importance that it deserves across all the stakeholders. But in reality, what we see is a different sort of implementation and general awareness. And, you know, across industries, across different executives, and also in terms of, you know, how we are looking at adoption of secure by design and secure by default, is not really still prominent and important aspect. While security as a topic looks very important, we seem to be lagging behind on that. So one of the things that I've been talking about is really the notion of democratizing security. And what I mean by that is the fact that you have created information security units and the cybersecurity units within your organization. And in a way, it's kind of created a challenge for us, because all our stakeholders believe that the job of security and cybersecurity is with these individuals, and they sort of externalize it. But really, the security teams are the catalyst to the change. They're not the change in themselves. And unless every single stakeholder understands their role and feels empowered and accountable to execute their responsibility, security cannot be really truly embedded in the organization. So what are your thoughts when you talk about this notion of democratizing security, which is really not about shifting right, but shifting everywhere, top, down, left, and bottom, because really you want to make sure that every stakeholder understands that. So your thoughts on that?
There's a lot in there, isn't there? Let me go to security by design first. I'm a fan of it. You know, I've been talking about it for some years. I remember having a conversation with Anne Kavoukian some years ago now, who was the Toronto Privacy Commissioner, about security by design, about how we might enable that. And she has some very interesting insights as to how we could make it easy. I think the sad reality is that security by design comes with an associated cost, if we're talking about it from application development, software development standpoint. And inevitably, in an environment where we are moving very quickly to get product to market, there will always be this temptation to cut corners, to skip security. So security by design as a concept, I think, is exactly the way that we need to be going. It's far easier to build it in from the outset rather than try to retrofit it. The costs associated are much lower if you do that. But again, it comes down to maturity and it comes down to market pressure. And I don't think we're anywhere near institutionalizing security by design as the way to go from an industry standpoint. There's still very much more work to do in that area. I hope that we get there. I'm not convinced that we'll do it in the short term. Then to your point about democratization, which I like very much, I think you're absolutely right. I use slightly different terms, which I use to be a little bit provocative, because I know that security professionals absolutely hate being referred to in this way. So I talk about security becoming salesmen and consultants, and they hate that. But it gets them thinking. So your point to democratization is very, very well made. We have to embed security across our corporations. It is impossible for any organization, even one the size of Infosys, to have enough people in a security function to ensure that good practice, strong security has been implemented right the way across all of the Infosys corporate infrastructure and supply chain and users, and I could go on. So you can't do it. So the only way that it can be done is through this embedding, if you like, or spreading of the security message out into the business, into our offices, into people's homes, actually, because we live in a hybrid world now. And so the role of security has to be to educate. It has to be to support. I talk a lot about the need to try to identify probably some of the most difficult business leaders that you have, because I see this as being a transformation program. It's change. It's a change program. So what do you do in change programs typically? Well, you always over-communicate, right? You have to tell people all the time what's going on. Ideally, you want to try to identify some particularly difficult individuals, because if you can convert them, they become evangelists. So we need to, I suppose, not take always the line of least resistance, but to go for some of the more difficult scenarios that we're in and deal with those. And that may make us relatively unpopular in certain instances. And I think that's a concern that people have. But I think that we have to confront that challenge head on. I'll give you an example. I was talking to a chief information security officer the other day of a very large American bank. And we were talking about cybersecurity exercises and the need for them. And he said to me, "Steve, one of my problems is that my CEO does not understand." You know, I talked to him about the need to prepare for the day when our systems go down. And his response is, "Well, if our systems go down, you simply go down to the local store and buy us new equipment and up we go again." That for me is a fundamental lack of understanding of the role that not just security, but also technology plays in the business. And so in some instances, we have to start at a fairly low level in terms of getting that message across. Now, I think, interestingly, some of the things that have been happening in the world have helped us with that. So I'm thinking in particular of things like attacks on Colonial Pipeline, because that brought security really front and center. Now, that hits people where it really hurts. You can't get fuel for your car. That means you can't take the kids to school, you know, that kind of thing. Had much, much more effect than some of the attacks where, you know, millions of data points were lost because people couldn't relate to that. You know, people have to be able to relate to it. And so I think that's a key message for us in security. Whenever we talk to people about what we do or the role that we play or how we're trying to protect assets, we have to make it real. We have to really give them something that they can touch, taste, feel, bring in all of those different senses. And I think then we're really in with a chance. If we talk to them about process, if we talk to them about governance, yes, we'll make a little bit of progress with certain people. But if we're talking about company-wide initiatives, it really has to be in your face. How does it, you know, relate? How can I relate to it? It relate to me. And that, I think, is a real challenge for us in security. But I think that that just means we have to work with some smart people in other parts of the business, HR, marketing, communications, to get the message across. And that, for me, again, is what makes security so exciting, because it keeps changing. And we have to be able to address some of these really challenging issues. And eventually, I think if we can do that, we will get to this point where democratization has been an accepted theme, because we see it happening across our enterprises. And in fact, if you're not doing it, then that's a problem. And we have to get to that point where people are talking about it as being the norm, the simple way that we do business rather than anything else.
So, Steve, you've been meeting with leadership teams across the globe, talking to the CEOs and the C-suite executives, trying to really understand the message of cyber and also giving them the message of cybersecurity. What is it that you're hearing from that? And if you can pass that in terms of the three key messages that these leadership teams and C-suites are expecting out of the CISOs, what would those be?
I think it's still very patchy, Vishal, is the way I would describe it. Sometimes I can talk and they are absolutely on it. They understand it. They really get how important security is to the business. And so they ask very demanding questions of their security people. Others are still not quite there. But overall, I would say probably over the past, 3 to 4 years, boards, C-suites have got better at understanding how this all fits together. And the ones that really do get it, I think, have come at it from the perspective of a broad-based understanding of the role, interestingly, that technology and data plays in their business. And so by doing that, they understand the importance of security. For others, there is still this educational process that we have to go through. And quite often, CISOs will say to me, well, how do I prepare for a board meeting? And my answer to that is you prepare for the board meeting well before the board meeting. The board meeting is formulaic. What I mean by that is you probably have something like, if you're lucky, 30 to 40 minutes with a board once, maybe twice a year. The more advanced companies are doing it now quarterly, which I think is absolutely fantastic. But the work doesn't happen in the boardroom. That's what I mean by it being formulaic. The work happens outside the boardroom. So the CISOs that are making the most headway are the ones that have taken the time to build their network with the senior executives. So that when they walk into that boardroom, they're known, they understand the issues, and it becomes a much richer, focused discussion rather than having to take time to bring everybody up to speed on a topic that, let's face it, a significant proportion of board members will know nothing about and have very little interest in. So the hard work happens outside the boardroom, and it's about being relevant. It's about being appropriate. It's about adding value. And it's about being very clear on the position that you have. You know, as a CISO, you are not a board member. That isn't your job. What you are there to do is to provide expert insight into some really complex challenges in a way that non-experts can understand, relate to their jobs and what they're trying to do with the business, and view you, and this is a very sort of hackneyed term, but it's very true, and I think it's where we need to get to, view you as being their trusted advisor. So if anything comes up on the issue of security, who do we need to talk? Vishal will give us the answer, or whoever it happens to be in the organization. That's difficult, because if we look at the tenure of CISOs as well, you know, they move around a lot. You know, the average tenure is what, 2 years, three? I mean, you know, we've known each other in, I think you've been at what, three or four different organizations in the time that we've known each other. So, you know, and continually evolving and developing. And from a career perspective, of course, we want our CISOs to be doing that. But the point is that these are now becoming very high impact roles. That, I think, is exactly where we want to be. So the role of the CISO going forward is one that has immense, I think, power within an organization, if done correctly. Boards are looking for support. They're looking for advice. They're looking for that insight. But they want it in a way that they can relate and that they can understand. They're not interested in KPIs and KRIs and all this other stuff. They don't understand it, not interested. How does it relate to what we're trying to do from the business perspective? That's what they're looking for. They're looking for people who can clearly explain that to them. They're looking for assurance that the organization is doing the right stuff so that come the day that something goes wrong, the business can recover and get back up and running. And they also, I think, are looking for somebody to keep them current on what they should and what they shouldn't be worried about. We now live in a world where large-scale breaches are very quickly advertised. And board members in the same sector tend to worry about that sort of stuff. So again, it's almost about calming them down, giving them this assurance that actually, you know, the security guys know what they're doing. Yes, it could be a risk, but we're managing it. And this is how we're managing it. And this is the role that you, Mr. Board Member, can play in doing that. And one final thing I would say there, this is really useful, I think. When I spoke to Max McEwen, who was one of our keynotes at the recent Congress, I asked him, how does he, because he does a lot of strategy work with boards, and I asked him, how do you get the message across about the importance or the relevance of security or a breach or something going wrong? And he said, what I do is I ask board members or C-suite to think about how they would put the company out of business. What are the things that they would do? And he said that changes their perspective immediately, because now I'm putting them into the shoes of an attacker, and they can begin to understand the role, therefore, that they play in terms of defending against that. And he said, you get very different perspectives, whether you're talking to a chief marketing officer, whether a chief financial officer, a chief executive officer, or a chairman. And he said, and all of that is valid because it gives you the insight into where these different people are coming from in their view of the organization and the risks that the organization is dealing with. And that is absolutely gold dust in terms of how you then go about addressing those issues from the security standpoint, because now you've got insight that you wouldn't otherwise have, and you can address that accordingly. So I think boards are getting better. We've still got a long way to go. There is a hunger for more information. The security professional, the CISO, has an ever important role to play. And we are getting better, but we need to get even better still at how we communicate some of these messages more effectively to boards.
Thank you so much for your time today, Steve. It's always fascinating to get your views. ISF has been a great partner for Infosys for many years, and this partnership has been growing from step to step every year. Thank you so much for your time today, and look forward to this continuous collaboration and partnership.
Thanks for joining us for this special conversation with Vishal Salvi and Steve Durbin. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new episode. In the meantime, if there's a topic or question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, please do let us know at securityforum.org. That's also where you can find our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. You can get in touch with CEO Steve Durbin on LinkedIn by searching Steve Durbin or Security Forum. Please follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like our program, it would really make a difference to us if you would rate and review us. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak. Associate producer Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.